First, it's Food Friday. The holiday weekend is usually a time to have people over and get together around the grill. While we may not have the gatherings we're used to, many of us will still be firing up the grill, maybe for the first time this year. Before tossing on our favorite meats and veggies, it's important to make sure our grill is in good working order, that we have the equipment we need, and if we need a replacement, where to start looking. Good news, our next guest is a barbecue and grilling expert, and he's here to help us sort it all out. Meathead Goldwyn is founder of AmazingRibs.com and the author of Meathead, The Science of Great Barbecue and Grilling, a New York Times bestseller, also named one of the 100 best cookbooks of all time by Southern Living Magazine. Meathead, welcome back.
Hey, it's good talking to you again.
Well, I'm assuming that Memorial Day weekend will not be your first time grilling this season, but for a lot of people, it is. What should we do to give our old grill a shakedown cruise and make sure it's ready to rock for the weekend?
Well, if you've got a gas grill, it always helps to look at what they call the venturi. It's where the gas and the air mix. Just behind the dials, there's an opening. Spiders sometimes get in there, and they can block the airflow and or the gas flow. So you want to look around there. You want to give it inspection. You want to make sure the hose doesn't have any cracks. Open up the valve on the propane tank. Take a good sniff. Make sure there's no gas smells. If you want to be really careful, mix a little dish soap with some water and paint it on the areas around the valves and see if it's bubbling. And really important, scrub down the cooking surface, the grill grates. To get those scrubbed down real clean. When you fire it up, you'll see a lot of smoke, but that's grease smoke. It's not tasty. Grease smoke doesn't taste good like wood smoke. So get all that grease off of there, and whatever you do, do not put those grill grates in the dishwasher unless you want to sleep on the couch for a week.
What is the best way to clean those grates? I usually just, you know, I mean, every time I use it, I scrape it down with a wire brush, a little oil, but should I be doing more than that on the grates?
No, that's fine. You can use a paint scraper. A lot of people ball up a wad of aluminum, and actually aluminum foil actually works well. Wire brushes work great. They're the best all around for both sides. You got to get the underside, but you got to be careful. Some wire brushes are built cheaper than others, especially the wood handled ones, and bristles will sometimes come out. And if a bristle comes out and sticks to the cooking surface, it can get on a burger or on your chicken, and you do not want to eat a wire bristle brush and spend the holiday in the emergency room. So if
good,
you're going to use a bristle brush, make sure you check the surface carefully in daylight or with a really bright flashlight to make sure you didn't leave any bristles behind.
How do we know if it's time to put the old grill out to pasture, charcoal or gas, and go shopping for a new one?
Geez, it's like, how do I know when it's time to buy a new computer, you know? you know, it depends on what you like to cook. If you're a steak lover, for example, you need really high heat to get a great dark sear on steaks. And for that, charcoal is better than gas. Most gas grills just don't have the power to sear a steak beautifully. They can make grill marks, and grill marks are brown hatch marks, branding on the surface. And those hatch marks are the result of what's called a Maillard reaction. It's a chemical reaction of the protein changed by heat from the hot metal. But what you really want is a totally brown surface, Maillard reaction from edge to edge. And most gas grills just don't have the juice to do that. Charcoal usually does. Now, some gas grills come with what they call a sear burner. And those sear burners have extra energy, and they can sometimes get you a great sear on a steak. But everybody wants to make a steak as good as they do at the steakhouses. And although most steakhouses cook with gas, your regular backyard gas grill generally doesn't have the power. So charcoal is the way to get that steakhouse flavor.
We're talking to Meathead Goldwyn on this edition of Food Friday, talking about grilling. He's got a lot of advice for gear and techniques. You can join in with your questions or your own advice at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Meathead, you're a big advocate of measuring temperature, both inside the grill itself and, of course, using the meat thermometer to get the temperature, the internal temperature of the meat we're cooking. Can I use the same thermometer to do both, or do I have to have two different things here?
Well, first of all, let me praise you. You've done your homework. You obviously have poked around the website or my book. Thank you. Yeah, you're right. I'm a fanatic about temperature control. Cooking, or any kind of cooking, indoors and out, is all about temperature control. What is the temperature of the air? What is the temperature of the food? For example, a medium rare steak is the most juicy and the most tender, and that's 130 to 135 degrees. Poultry, in order to be safe, has to be 160 to 165 degrees when you take it off the grill. So to do that, you need a thermometer that can measure the temperature of the food. That's the most important, measuring the temperature of the food. If you've got a good digital thermometer, and you can get a great digital thermometer for under 30 bucks, or even some under 20, and we have a guy, an electrical engineer, who tests thermometers for us. We've got a buyer's guide. We don't sell anything, but we rate and review thermometers. You can go and find one on our site and then click on the link and go find it somewhere. But measuring the temperature of the inside of the meat means you'll never have to stand there at the head of the table, and when people cut into their steaks, expensive steaks, and say, oh, gosh, it kind of got away from me, I'm sorry. Or worse still, take Granny to the hospital because the chicken's way underdone. If you want to spend another 40, 50 bucks and get a really good digital oven thermometer, which is a grill is really just an outdoor oven, only it doesn't have a thermostat. These are probes that you clip on the cooking surface right next to the meat, so it feels the same temperature as the meat does. And that's really helpful, because can you imagine cooking indoors without knowing what your oven temperature is? You don't know that for sure outdoors. Most grills have a thermometer on them, but they're these cheap dial thermometers. They're the cheapest thing that they can get, and they're up in the dome of the grill, which is great if you're going to eat the dome, but the food is down below, and it's a different temperature down there. So if you can afford it, get two thermometers, one an instant read for the meat and another a probe for sitting next to the meat.
Now, one technique thing that I learned from you, actually, I think last time you were on, and it's been working great for me, and I want to bring it back up. Now, I usually thought you want the grill hot, you get the meat on the hot grill, you sear it on the outside, and just keep on cooking it. Then, of course, the outside gets overcooked. You talk about, I think you used the phrase reverse searing, where you heat it up at a, you know, not as high temperature, and then finish it with the sear. Can you talk about when we want to do that and what it does?
Yeah, oh, you're advanced.
Oh, not as advanced as I make myself sound, I promise you.
You graduated from the beginner's class. You're in the advanced class.
Exactly.
It's a really important concept. Meat is 70% water. Water doesn't transmit heat very well. So if you take a piece of meat and put it directly over the flame or glowing coals, you're going to cook the exterior very rapidly, but it will take a while for that heat to get all the way down to the center. And on a very thin piece of meat, like a skirt steak, you want to put it over direct heat so you can sear the exterior and get that dark brown Maillard reaction, which is full of flavor, but not overcook the interior. So to do that, you've got to have a lot of heat. But if you've got a thick piece of meat, like an inch and a half ribeye or a turkey breast or even a chicken breast, mm-hmm. It takes a while to heat those, and the very best way to do a chicken or a thick steak is you divide your grill in half, and if it's a charcoal grill, you push all the charcoal to one side, or a gas grill, you turn on the burners all on one side and leave the burners off on the other side, and you have two zones, a hot zone, which is directly above flame or glowing coals, and a non-hot zone, which we call the indirect or the convection air zone, and that's a lot cooler. And you put the food on the indirect side where it warms gently. And so there's time for the temperature to warm all the way through, and the food is evenly cooked from edge to edge. But you don't have a dark exterior. What you've done is you've cooked the interior. Now just before it's done, let's say we're doing a steak, 130 to 135 is medium rare, perfect temperature, or a chicken, 160 to 165 is safe. You're going to start it on the indirect side and bring it up to about 10 degrees below your target. So 120 on a steak, 150 on a chicken. Then you're going to move it over to the hot side, right above. That's infrared radiation. That's glowing infrared. It's radiant heat. It's much more powerful than warm air. You lift the lid, and you let it pound the underside with that infrared radiation, and you flip it. And you flip it. And that goes against everything you've been told, but everything you've been told is wrong. You flip it and flip it and flip it. That way, you're cooking the exterior now on the direct infrared radiant heat side, and you're browning the exterior, and you're not going to burn the chicken skin because you flip it. And you flip it. And when you flip it, the hot energy that is built up on the underside now is on the top, and because the lid is up, the energy bleeds off into the atmosphere rather than working its way down to the center. So you cook the inside in convection airflow on the indirect, and the outside on the hot side over infrared energy, and you'll get perfectly cooked food every time, not overcooked in the center, and you don't get that rainbow look on a steak where the exterior is dark brown. Just below the surface, it's tan. Then in the center, it's pink. And then finally, it's rosy. You'll get it all the even color.
It's Food Friday. We're talking to Meathead Goldwyn of AmazingRibs.com, author of Meathead, The Science of Great Barbecue and Grilling. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What questions do you have about grilling gear or grilling techniques? What are your favorite things to put on the grill this time of year? Do you have a way to get them just right? Are you still chasing perfection? Is there something you want to try cooking on the grill, maybe for the first time ever, and you need some starter advice? Call in at 800-642-1234. 1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. We'll pick up the conversation coming up on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferret. It's Food Friday. We're talking to barbecue whisperer Meathead Goldwyn, author of Meathead, The Science of Great Barbecue and Grilling. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you have questions about how to grill, what to grill with, or anything in between? What are your favorite things to get on the grill these first warm days of the year? Do you have a special recipe or tip to share, or do you need advice on how to cook whatever you want to cook on the grill? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. We'll go to your calls now. Dan is with us in Oconomowoc. Dan, hi.
Hi. Hey, my charcoal grill is about ready to give up the ghost this year, I think. And I'm curious about the pellet grills. Do they get as hot as the charcoal, or?
What do you think, Meathead?
Yeah, no, they don't. These pellet grills are really better called pellet smokers. They're like your indoor oven. There's a little cup in the bottom of the grill, or the smoker, I should say, that has these little wooden pellets in them, and they burn, but there's a metal plate above them, just like your indoor oven. And so you're never exposing the food to direct infrared radiation, so you can't really sear like you can on charcoal. The beauty of the pellet smokers, though, are they're absolutely brain-dead simple to operate. They're electronically controlled, so you got to have an outlet nearby, and you can set the temperature, and it goes to that temperature and stays there. Really very low variation from that temperature, so you can set it at 225, throw a beef brisket on there, walk away, and 12 hours later, because that's what it'll take, it's absolutely perfection. So what it does well is low and slow, or it can get warm in there, but it's warm air, and warm air doesn't give you that dark exterior that hot metal, like a frying pan, or infrared radiation. So if you're a steak lover or a lamb chop lover or a burger lover, you're going to be better off with a charcoal grill. But if you love ribs, pulled pork, brisket, smoked turkey, pellet smokers are fantastic. Now, there's one exception. The new Weber pellet smoker actually has exposure to direct flame, and it can sear, but it's got a couple of, it's the first one they've ever built, and it's got a couple of glitches in the initial model. I would wait until they come out with version two.
Dan, hope that helps. We'll go now to Jim in Milwaukee. Jim, hi.
Hey, how are you?
Good. What did you want to bring up, Jim?
Well, I've just got a sous vide cooker, and I'm going to try to do steaks this weekend. And I have seen people use it for steaks where you'll, you know, do a sous vide, you know, cook on it for till maybe it's 110, 120, and then do what you said, put it over direct, very hot heat on a charcoal grill to finish it to 130, 135, 140, wherever you want. Have you ever done anything like that?
Yeah, not only that, I wrote a book on it. I call this sous vide Q, sous vide and barbecue combined, and it's a Kindle book on Amazon for only $3.99, and it's a great technique. For listeners who don't know what sous vide is, you put the food in a plastic bag, and you seal it up where there's no air in there. You just slip it into some water, and you put a heater in the water, and the water warms to exactly the temperature you want it to. I recommend that you don't go as low as 110 or 120. That's a danger zone. Microbes can grow in there. You want to get it a minimum of 130. Now, I know that's right on the edge of medium rare, but don't worry. Sous vide will not ruin your steak. Take it up to 130. But when you take it out of the, and you can leave it in that temperature, you can never overcook it. It's set for 130. You can never get to 135 or 140. It'll never overcook. And you'll leave it there for 3-4 hours. And then you take it out, and the exterior is just butt ugly. It's gray. It's tan. You're going to take it and throw it over a direct hot flame. And you know what I love to do? You know what a charcoal chimney is? It's like a, it looks like a coffee can, and you put charcoal in it to start your charcoal fire for grill.
Sure.
Well, if you've got a charcoal chimney, and you can get one for like 20 or 30 bucks, when you pile that halfway full and you load it up with charcoal and light it, the top end of that chimney is well over 1,000 degrees. That is way up there in steakhouse steak range. You put a little cooking grate on top of that baby, and it's like cooking over the back end of an F-16. You take it out of your sous vide bag, you throw it on top of the charcoal chimney, flip, 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 flip. You got to move fast because it won't take long, 3 or 4 minutes per side maximum, and you've got a fantastic sear. It's a lot of fun. I've done this. I did 500 of them for a crowd at an event in Delaware last year. Go to Amazon and check out my Kindle book for $3.99, and it tells you all about sous vide Q.
Thanks a lot for the call. We'll go now to Zach in Lake Mills. Zach, hi.
Hey there, guys. I just had a tip. I know this is about meat, but you got to have something to go with the meat. Beets. Do you like beets? A lot of people don't know that you can just take your beet, put it directly on a grill, 10, 20 minutes, depending how well you want it done, and the skin falls right off. You don't have to do anything with that strange beet skin.
I didn't know that. You have successfully identified the only food in the world that I won't eat. I have eaten some really weird stuff in foreign countries. I just have never. I think it stems from an unpleasant experience as a boy with borscht. But I just don't care for beets. But that's cool that this, because getting them skinned is hard. That skin is like leather.
Thanks a lot for that tip. Now, speaking of anything on the grill, our producer tells me, you know, you're a Chicago guy, but you know we like our cheese here in Wisconsin. And I understand you're working on grilling. You're grilling cheese?
Well, you can actually grill some cheeses right on the grill. There's a kind of cheese called halloumi. First of all, grilled cheese sandwiches are really good on the grill. You can't get too hot, but you make up your grilled cheese sandwich the way you normally would. Paint the outside with butter and put it over a medium to low flame, and you'll get some of that smokiness. In fact, you can throw some wood on there, and they're wonderful. Grilled cheese, grilled. What a thought. Here's a fun one. When you buy Parmigiano Reggiano, the real Parmesan from Italy, the wheel has a very thick exterior crust, and it's all natural cheese. There's no plastic on it, but it's like hard as a rock. And Italians know Nonna used to take that exterior and throw it in the soup, and it would kind of gelatinize there and adds flavor to the soup. Take that, and you can often buy it at a cheese store cheap, that Parmigiano Reggiano crust. You throw it on the grill, and it gets soft like taffy. It pulls like taffy, and you put that on a little bit of a crusty French bread. It's wonderful. It's a great deal of fun. Hard cheeses, dry hard cheeses, you can actually grill them, and with a little thing like fig jam on a grilled piece of cheese. Fantastic. Really fun.
All right, Meathead, we have just a minute left. Leave us with one tip or bit of encouragement. I'll let you take it wherever you want in that minute.
Well, we've already touched upon it, but I can't emphasize enough how important thermometers are. I know a lot of you out there, particularly the guys, I don't need a thermometer. But seriously, you really can't tell by poking the meat with your finger and comparing it to your hand. Your hand and my hand are different. The different cuts of meat are different firmnesses. Nothing will make you a better cook overnight than a good meat thermometer. I know it's probably too late for this weekend, but go to our website and look at the thermometer reviews. Order one from the manufacturer or from Amazon, or find it at your hardware store and get a good digital meat thermometer. Nothing will make you a better cook overnight.
I'm sold. Meathead, thanks a lot for joining us.
Hey, Rob, good talking to you. Have a happy weekend, everybody.
You too. That's Meathead Goldwyn, founder of AmazingRibs.com and author of the book Meathead, The Science of Great Barbecue and Grilling. He talked with us about what we need to know about getting our grills in working order for the holiday weekend.